In celebration of Norman Rockwell Museum's 50th anniversary, they're looking back at the many ways that illustrators portrayed news events and reflected popular culture in 1969. Norman Rockwell's own work reflected the changing times with his depiction of the moon landing, an album he painted for rock musicians, and a tribute to the final issue of the Saturday Evening Post. The exhibition Woodstock to the Moon 1969 Illustrated combines original illustration with vintage archival material, a great deal of it that comes from the Sesame Workshop and Sesame Street. The exhibit is beautiful. It's on view at the Norman Rockwell Museum in Stockbridge through October 27th. To learn more about it all and about Sesame Street in particular, we welcome Jesse Kowalski, Norman Rockwell's curator of exhibitions, as well as Lewis Mitchell, who is creative director of character design at Sesame Street's Sesame Workshop. And it's a great pleasure to welcome you both to the program. Thank you very much for being with us.
Good morning.
Thank you. Good morning.
Thank you very much for being here. So, Jesse, give us an idea. I would say, well, how did this come about? But 1969 is 50 years, so you sort of had to do something.
Yeah, no.
I mean, it's your 50th anniversary.
Sure.
It's a big deal. So this is what you do.
Yeah, no, we figured it would be great to look back what was going on in the year 1969 in the field of illustration. It was such a pivotal year for the U.S. with the moon landing and Woodstock, Vietnam, race riots and things. And so I thought it'd be interesting to see how illustration portrayed those things. And so we've got illustrations of, well, Rockwell's portraits of Nixon and Eisenhower, a portrait he did for the Bureau of Land Reclamation, of course, his portrait from the moon landing on loan from the Smithsonian, and works by many, many other artists, including the Minister of Black Culture for the Black Panthers. Mm-hmm. We have a piece from him from 1969. And Seymour Quast was the creator of Pushpin Studios, which helped create the I Love New York symbol logo.
Right.
Some protest work from him. And, of course, the Woodstock poster, film and music posters from that year, and a large section devoted to Sesame Street.
So how did the Sesame Street become a part of it and such a large part of the exhibit?
Well, I've always been a big fan, especially of Jim Henson and Frank Oz and the Muppets. And our director, I believe, was at a party with someone from Sesame Street, and they just got together and thought, hey, it's both of our 50th anniversaries. Let's do something together. And so I went down to New York and visited Sesame Street and talked to their archivists, and we came up with this great idea.
Hold it.
Yeah.
I went down and visited Sesame Street. So what do you mean by that? Did you go in the set or did you?
No, I didn't get to
visit
the set.
Right.
I went to the offices.
Okay.
In Manhattan.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
All right. And learned a lot about what was there.
Mm-hmm.
And did you meet with Lewis?
I didn't meet with Lewis in person. We met shortly after over email.
So Lewis Mitchell, as we mentioned, is creative director of character design at Sesame Street Sesame Workshop. Lewis, tell me about that title. What does that mean?
Well, first of all, thanks for having me on. I'm really excited about this. Well, creative director means that I make sure the characters look right, look good, and always behave the way they're supposed to wherever they're shown, meaning their personalities have to come through. Everybody's very clear. Their personalities represent specific ideals. So we just make sure, and I make sure, that those ideals are kept at the forefront, whether it's sometimes it's even toys or, you know, the Macy's Parade Balloon a while back I did, and wherever they're shown, they're always supposed to be who they are. So
and
that's pretty much my job.
Is that hard? I mean, it because it would seem to me that if, because of licensing and because of the iconic nature of these characters, that it can get a little bit unwieldy sometimes.
Well, there are a lot of products all over the world, and I mean, it's an international company. It's also a nonprofit educational organization, so we have a high responsibility to make sure that these characters are representing the initiatives all around the world and every different co-production. So it's very big, but we have an amazing team of people. We really work symbiotically, and it's like a flow. So, of course, there are challenges, but we know how to work those out because we've been doing it for 50 years now. We're celebrating 50 years of Sesame Street. And it's just the most exciting thing in the world. You know, I remember watching the very first episode, not knowing what I was looking at, but I was hooked on immediately.
How long have you been with Sesame Workshop?
Well, full-time employee, I'm here almost 20 years, but I started in 1992, so it's approaching about 28 years.
Now, has there always been a creative director of character design?
No, actually, it was created maybe 15 years ago. I'm actually the third person to hold this office, but each one of us, you know, evolved it into a new position depending on the needs of the company. Everything here grows constantly because, you know, the initiatives grow and we get new research all the time. So there really is no stagnation. We continue to grow with every, you know, every year. So I'm looking forward to the next 50 years. But did I answer your question?
That certainly did answer my question. So Cookie Monster, there is a Cookie Monster puppet in the exhibit, right? So now I'm going to ask you about how that happened, how you get the Cookie Monster, and then I'm going to ask, Lewis about, you know, how you make that look right. But go ahead.
Sure, yeah. We were trying to put together the history of Sesame Street, starting with Joan Ganz Cooney in 1966. She applied to the Carnegie Foundation for money to research whether or not kids could learn from watching television. And through their process, I thought it would be great to have a Muppet in the show. I thought it would be good for kids to see, adults who'd watched the show growing up. And we originally asked for Bert and Ernie, but they were unavailable, prior commitment. And so Cookie Monster showed up, and that was terrific. And then when Lewis showed up, I was thrilled because he shows up with this grooming kit and proceeds to groom and prepare Cookie Monster to look as amazing as he does now.
And that is, how many Cookie Monsters are there, Lewis?
There's only one Cookie Monster.
Okay, I know.
No.
Yes.
There are a few. Because depending on what's needed, especially when I do photo shoots, I have a full-body Cookie Monster and I have a half-body Cookie Monster that occasionally can double as a performance character. But, you know, whatever the need is, we're prepared with multiple characters, depending on which ones they are.
So years ago, Sarah LaDuke and I, our producer, were in Washington, D.C., and there was a Muppet exhibit. And we were there, and the two of us who are fans were just gaga over these characters. And I asked Sarah to come in because I wanted to make sure I got this right. But there was a child who was looking at one of the characters. And what did the kid say?
Sorry. She went, "Oh, it's Kermit, but is he dead?" Because he wasn't moving. It was so sad and sweet.
So I have not ever forgotten that. And so Lewis, isn't that what you have to do? Because you have to make him look like Cookie Monster. Like, you want to keep him alive, right?
Yeah, that's the whole idea, because they are alive. I mean, you're looking at a puppet, but it's really a personality that you're looking at. So the puppet is the container of this wonderful personality. And my job is, when I do photo shoots, or even when I'm drawing the characters, I do a lot of illustration as well. You know, each character represents a different personality. So we make sure that that's infused in the puppets and the drawings and everything. So that particular Cookie Monster that's at the museum, I did pose him myself. And he's my very favorite character of all time. Not just Sesame Street, of all time, he's my favorite character. Because, so I had to make sure he was looking his very best.
Yes, because we want to see him. We want to see him look like Cookie Monster, and we want to make him seem like he just was with us. Yeah, the way we remember him.
We have something to that because you know, he can look like a Cookie Monster, but if he's not posing or acting like Cookie Monster, that can throw things off. And that's why one of my most important jobs is to review products and things to make sure they're being who they're supposed to be. So it's not just the look. It's the personality. It's the action. It's the behavior.
So what else do you have? What else were you able to? So once they open it up to you and say, what are you looking for? Then you, how do you answer that, Jesse?
At Sesame Street. Yeah, I was looking at the original correspondence, how Sesame Street got started in the late 1960s. And then at the first season in 1969, you know, it was they had a multicultural crew, a multicultural cast, and it was really a revolutionary show for its time. So I wanted to show that off. And then we've got some terrific photos of Jim Henson and Frank Oz at work, preliminary sketches of Bert and Ernie from Jim Henson, sheet music that Joe Raposo wrote for the show, and some animation cells from the first season, and also a Rockwell parody, triple self-portraits done by Sesame Street artist Joe Matthew, and then one that Lewis just gave to us.
Yeah. So this, it's pretty amazing. I mean, what it seems what so much of this has in common is the cultural relevance and importance that that Sesame Street has and Norman Rockwell has.
Yeah, definitely. It's funny. One of the drawings we were installing, I was looking at it, and it's about, I think Lewis can correct me, but it's something titled Red Kids or Red Muppets and Blue Muppets or something. And it's about a moving van with different Muppets. And it's almost identical to Norman Rockwell's New Kids in the Neighborhood painting.
Oh, yeah.
You know, with the African-American right. children and the white children. And I think the theme of the Sesame Street book has the same theme. So just, it was funny kind of seeing these Norman Rockwell influences in Sesame Street.
And that is, that's an interesting point too, Lewis, is that a large part of this, of course, is the illustration of these characters are often illustrated, and then that's your job too, right?
Yes, sir. Whether it's licensing artwork or actually reviewing work for books, I don't do the actual artwork for the books, but I do a lot of the actual licensing artwork.
Right.
Because the books, there's more room for interpretation, and we like to give artists from all over the world opportunity to show their interpretation of the characters as long as they're being who they're supposed to be. But for me, when I do artwork, it's the licensing art that's very controlled. But again, because I bring what my supervisor calls Muppet love, I bring that to it. So that's what's coming through even in the drawings.
Muppet love. Now, you are also, if I have read your biography correctly, sir, have had a hand in creating characters as well.
Yes, sir. The first one I actually helped a little bit on was Cammy. She's from South Africa, and she's the HIV positive Muppet. And it was a very, very important initiative. But when they were first building her, the builder wasn't quite sure how to make her look from the front. He only had a three-quarter view of it. So I said, well, look, I have to design this logo, and I have to put her in a front view. Let me just do a sketch, and if you can approve it, I can go forward with it. He said, sure, take a stab at it. So I did that. I sent it along, and he says, wow, this is great. Now I can finish the puppet. So that was very exciting. That was like my first time. But as time went on, I got to do other little things. When I did storyboards, they would actually take the Anything Muppets. They're the Muppets that are like Mr. Potato Head in a way. They have no features on them, but they can put eyes and noses and wigs and turn them into pretty much anybody they need to. So I would, when I did storyboards and it was like maybe a mailman needed, I know the library of different shapes that they have. So I was able to do that in the sketch, and they would follow my sketch carefully. But then one day came, and I had volunteered at a school on Staten Island for children on the autism spectrum. And this is before I even got the assignment to design Julia, the autism Muppet. And I was able to bring so much to her because I worked with the families, I worked with the children very closely, and the teachers. So by the time I got to that project, and I would not have touched it if I didn't have this experience, because it's a very, very sensitive initiative, but it's also a very high profile. So I would not have wanted to really touch it if I didn't have that experience, and I got it even before I got the assignment. So Julia is probably the most high-profile character that I worked on. I also worked on Abby Cadabby's mother.
Mm.
Who is, her name is Maggie Cadabby, and you know Abby Cadabby, she's the little fairy on the show.
Yeah. Well, that's yeah, also so much fun. So obviously you have a wonderful a lot of wonderful stories that Lewis can add to this as well.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the exhibit is up. It also runs through October 27th. Am I correct on that?
That's correct.
Excellent. It is a part of Woodstock to the Moon, 1969, illustrated on view of the Norman Rockwell Museum in Stockbridge, Massachusetts, through October 27th. NRM.org for more information. Lewis Mitchell, Creative Director of Character Design at Sesame Workshop, thank you very much for being with us. Jesse Kowalski, Norman Rockwell's Curator of Exhibitions, always a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
NRM.org for more information.